Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Digiday Podcast. I'm your co-host, Kamiko McCoy, Senior Marketing Reporter here at Digiday.
And I'm Kaylee Barber, Media Editor at Digiday.
Kaylee, we have made it. I feel like I start every episode by saying, Kaylee, I'm so sorry. But we've made it not only through another week, but also through a once-in-a-lifetime, or twice-in-a-lifetime if you're a millennial, event of the solar eclipse. Did you get to watch it?
I did. I definitely experienced it, but my grandmother lives in upstate New York in like the path of totality. And so I was very excited to be like, hey, grandma, we're going to come visit. We're going to see the eclipse. I'll bring you the glasses. And she was really excited. And we were just completely covered in cloud, like just to the point where it was my grandma at one point, like she was just like, this is the pits. And then threw her glasses down and went inside. I got like two glimpses of it in between like cloud break, but yeah, I'm experiencing it through pictures for the most part. It didn't even really get dark. Like it was just so cloudy, very upsetting. Anyway, I'm guessing it was nowhere near you. So I'm guessing you didn't see it, or did you travel it? Okay.
I am down in Atlanta, so I was way off the beaten path. But it did get dark in my neighborhood. I'm assuming that was our little show. I did step away from my desk to go see it get dark in my neighborhood, which was nice. So I did see the last one that happened. I can't remember if that was back in 2016, 17 or 2018, the years blur together. But I did step outside and I had like the glasses. We all had matching t-shirts for this one. It was a fantastic time. The jokes on Twitter are the best part of this. Several people said, I'm going to look. They were like, don't look directly at it. And people were like, that's actually exactly what I'm going to do.
Oh, yeah.
So that I can take a day off.
Listen, I had the glasses. I had the filter for my camera phone. But, I mean, again, it was like, I will caveat it being extraordinarily cloudy. So I don't even know if I did like actual damage. But there were times where I peaked. I had to. Like, I was like, what's the deal? Is it actually going to hurt my eyes?
Also, it can't be worse than me staring at my computer screen for 12 hours a day.
Right? Like, I feel like that's way more damage. Also, there was, like, I cannot emphasize enough how many freaking clouds there were in this sky. But, like, I had to take off the glasses to, like, identify where in the world the sun was to begin with. So, like, yeah, that's why I had to, like, go without the glasses. Anyway, technically we lived through it. We lived through New Yorker region. Yeah. People lived through an earthquake followed by an eclipse, which was just, you know, two very crazy events back to back. But we're still here. We're still here to give you this podcast.
What a great way to put it. This week, you talked to Emma Rosenblum, Chief Content Officer at the Bustle Digital Group, about the return of print, something that as journalists is near dear to our heart. So what'd you talk to Emma about?
Yeah, so this month, or I guess technically last week, maybe for listeners, based on timing of everything, either way, Nylon is coming back in print, and it's twice a year to start, possibly going up to four times a year after, you know, this first test of it. But yeah, Emma came on to talk about why they're bringing back print for Nylon. BDG, Bustle Digital Group, isn't like completely new to print. W, which operates separately of Emma's group, but W does have print six times a year. So there are those kind of muscles worked within the company, specifically from the ad sales team. So there is some experience. There is some things that Emma's team is leaning on when it's, you know, when it comes to creating a new print product. But we talk about the reason why they wanted to bring back Nylon in print, why they, you know, focused on Nylon versus the other brands within the BDG portfolio, and then also how honestly hard it was to rev up, you know, a digitally native team into creating a print product. For some, you know, it was the first time they've dabbled in print for years. For others, it's the first time they've ever touched, like, or not touched, well, I guess, like, touched a red pen for editing purposes, but, like, been, you know, integrated into creating a print product. And it was a really interesting conversation. And very, I think, antithetical to a lot of the narratives going on in media right now when it comes to print products. So, and then we also talk a little bit about like the ad sales side of it too, because of course I have to ask those questions. But anyway, yeah, it was an interesting conversation about why print is back for BDG.
Selfishly, I hope it comes back for everybody. I love a good print publication, so excited to have you and Emma talk.
Awesome. Thank you. Emma, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
So there's exciting news that we're going to be talking about today. Print is coming back for Nylon, which I feel like is not... usually, print coming back is not usually two words that are put together that often in media, but that is a really exciting kind of piece of media news. What was the genesis for that idea or for that, I guess, announcement?
So, yes, we have a Nylon print. It's out today, or we announced our cover star today, who's Gwen Stefani, and it will actually be out on newsstands on April 16th. We acquired Nylon in 2019, right as I was starting in my role, and it was all digital at that point. It had not been in print for a couple years, and the plan was always to bring it back to print. It's such an iconic brand, beloved in print, born in print, and it just was kind of aching to come back always. The audience was there. They were asking us for it all the time. And for us, it just became a timing question. We had plans in 2020 to possibly bring it back to print. And then the pandemic happened and plans were put on hold. And this year, we felt like was the right year. It is the 25th anniversary of Nylon. It's also the 25th anniversary of Coachella, and we're pairing Nylon print with a Coachella issue, a music issue, and we're distributing it at our Nylon event at Coachella. All the stars kind of aligned. We also had the right staff in place in order to produce this product, which, you know, 4 years ago we didn't. And so that... really allowed us to dive into the project and create it. We've been working on it over the past, you know, 4 months at this point, and are so excited for it to be out in the world. It's like our little pretty baby, though it's big. It's a big magazine. It's not that little. So that's kind of the story behind it. But keep asking questions, and I can delve further in.
Yeah, a lot of questions. So the fact that it's coming back now, it's been out of print, to your point, longer than you've had ownership of Nylon. Was there a lot of inspiration, or like how similar is it to the old magazines that, you know, audiences might be remembering, or how much did you want to change it to make it more, you know, unique to like BDG's, you know, ethos and audience?
Right. So we definitely pulled inspo from the old magazines. I mean, at the start of the process, we gathered up many of the old issues, flipped through them, thought about what we could take and reimagine in terms of franchises, in terms of sections. But then we kind of blew the whole thing up and redid it for an audience today, for a world today. It's very much a product of its time. If you look at the old issues, they look like the coolest magazine that you could have gotten in the early 2000s. Magazines don't really look like that anymore. We needed to take it into the future. And we also made it a bigger size. So it's 10.5 by 14.5. So it's an oversized magazine now, whereas it used to be kind of standard size magazine. We, again, have sections in the magazine that the names will be reminiscent of the old Nylon, and people will be familiar with our It Girl franchise. We have party pages. We have the standard kind of beauty and fashion sections and feature sections. But beyond that, we really reinvented it. And I think if you were a fan of Nylon magazine, you'll flip through it and get a sort of sense. The aura of Nylon is there, which is the joy of discovery, the coolest musicians, the fashion that's the fashion before you're wearing it. And that will remain, but then also it looks really modern and fresh, and the imagery is something that you would only be able to find in 2024. So I'm excited about the melding of those two things and being able to kind of tap into the nostalgia somewhat, but then also take it into the future with a new audience as well.
Yeah. And I'm curious about the oversized nature of like the actual size of it. Was there like a, I guess, reason for it? Is it like, you know, meant to be something that could be a statement piece on like a coffee table or stand out on a newsstand? Like, what's the kind of idea behind just the pure size of it?
Yeah. I mean, it's that, cliche now when people talk about print as kind of like a small collectible product that you can put on a coffee table. I mean, I think that those words have come out of every editor's mouth in the past 10 years. So it's not something that we, but it is.
Yeah.
The thing is, it's actually true. I don't know if people have coffee tables anymore, but yes, it's the idea that it's like a stunning art piece of, it's almost like a piece of art. It's not, magazines have transitioned fully, in my opinion, from service-based products, particularly for women's magazines, where it was like kind of telling you how to live your life, to beautiful products that you can flip through and look at the pretty pictures and dive in, but re-dive in. And I think that's what we leaned into for Nylon. And that's why the bigger format works so well, because it really is about what it looks like, just as much as the stories that are in the magazine and the beauty and the fashion inspo that are in the magazine. It's about it as a standalone collectible, basically. So yes, I do think that that's partly why we made it bigger, also so that you can see the big pictures even bigger, and to differentiate it more from digital, because people have digital. You can see these images on Instagram, which is how everybody consumes them, but to have it, you know, even bigger in your hand, I think is a cooler experience than not.
Yeah. And is it limited to like newsstand distribution, or are you doing any kind of subscription model with it?
No. So it's newsstand and then distributed to, and targeted newsstand, obviously, Barnes & Noble, and then also distributed to high-end boutiques, hotels, airport lounges. It's that kind of product. We have a 50,000 issue run, and so it will be mixed in between those ways of getting it. It's priced at $9.99, and you know, in the future we might experiment with subscription models. We just found that as this kind of like smaller run, more contained run, it makes more sense to just be newsstand only. And then obviously we'll have it at our events, our Nylon events, and those will really be collectible also if you attend the event and you can somehow find a magazine. It's like finding a golden ticket in a chocolate bar. So I think the exclusivity of it will also drive interest, consumer interest in actually trying to get it. So We'll see how that goes, but I'm really optimistic that people are really going to want to get this magazine because there are not that many of them out in the world.
Yeah, and you mentioned Gwen Stefani is the first cover star. You're focusing on largely like the music scene and pop culture around music tied to Coachella. And how, I guess, because largely like I know Bustle has been doing kind of digital covers. There's been that, you know, editorial kind of cycle of focusing on like a monthly cover person and doing a lot of content around that. How are you thinking about that implication, given this is a smaller, you know, 50,000 issue run? How are you thinking about audience generation outside the parameters of the print and, you know, amplifying the content, I'm sure, that you created a great deal of around Gwen Stefani?
Yep, we did. And not just Gwen, but every story that appears in the magazine. We have a whole portfolio of Coachella musicians. We have an It Girl portfolio. We have, I mean, there's tons of celebrities in this magazine. Camila Cabello's in this magazine. We are, for each story, have its own separate plan of digital rollout in terms of when we're putting it up on nylon.com, how we're amplifying it over all of our social channels, how we're picking it up across the network of BDG sites entirely. And so we're thinking about this not just as a print product, obviously, but as something that's going to feed our digital channels for months. And I think, you know, it's funny for me as a magazine editor going back many years to think about this idea that we're still focused on like the digital rollout of the magazine, which was, it feels so retro to be thinking about that, because we used to have these long discussions back in the day about like, well, how do we put up a story that was in the magazine online, and when should we do it, and should we even do it, which is just, you know, obviously now at this day and age, like, yes, you put it up online. But it used to actually be a question. And so we are have a pretty novel plan for rollout. And I do think, particularly for a brand like Nylon, which is like smaller than, say, a Bustle in terms of the amount of stories that it's producing, in terms of the size of the staff, you know, it's not our huge content generator, right? It's more of one of our niche brands. So how much can we lean into the content that we've created for the magazine and repurpose it in interesting ways for, you know, in order to reach a much larger audience, which you will digitally? What can we do with the video that we've taken of these celebrities? What can we do for all of the social rollout in terms of the reels that we're making, in terms of the TikToks that we can take from these stories, and really get a bang for our buck, but also expand the audience and make people excited about the brand and also excited about the fact that there is a magazine that connects back to this content.
Yeah. And that's actually an interesting question. Like the fact that Nylon is one of your niche brands versus Bustle, which has a, you know, larger, more general audience, more content around it. And obviously Nylon did used to have a print iteration, but why not focus on, you know, maybe testing a print product for Bustle versus starting with, you know, Nylon? Well, not starting, because you have another print product, but we'll get into that.
Because Nylon has a history of print. Also, I do think that it's funny to think about the brands in the ecosphere that have successfully translated to print in this world versus the ones that have shut down. I mean, think about Glamour, think about InStyle, think about the brands that sort of align more with Bustle in terms of the general interest audience. They're not in print anymore because nobody could really figure out how to take that service model of like, here's how you put on your lipstick, right? Or like, here are the six like shirts that you need to buy, which obviously people are now like, that is content that they would never go to a magazine for, but they used to. So those print products were like, we can't really figure out how to exist right now. But the ones that still exist are the ones that really are leaning into a very specific audience, feel more niche, feel more visual, right? Like have the opportunity to do these beautiful fashion spreads and or huge celebrity covers, or just feel like cooler in a way visually, whereas the mass brands like never can't do that right now. So I do think that translating Bustle in that way to print is slightly more of a challenge for sure, because it doesn't lend itself as well to this like the coolness of Nylon, the like the cutting edge photography that we can do for Nylon. It's just like not what Bustle is. Which is great because we have lots of different audiences in our portfolio, including Bustle's audience, including Nylon's office audience, which have overlap a little bit, but not entirely. I do think that there's opportunity for a brand like Bustle to do more of like a special interest print product, where we work with one specific sponsor and bring to life like Bustle Beauty in a very like, smaller way. I would love to be the person who's like, this is the idea of how Bustle can be relevant in print and people will just be dying to get it. I haven't personally figured that out yet. Maybe somebody else on our staff will, but Nylon is easy. And also people love Nylon. So we wanted to start there and we knew we could get big celebrities for it. And we knew that we would be able to get advertisers for it immediately, which we did. And so that, you know, you start at the easiest place and then you can figure out, okay, is there potential for a Bustle print product? Is there potential for a Scary Mommy print product? I truly believe that there are potential for like parenting print products in a way that look and feel different. So we're sort of at the start of this journey and then we'll figure it out. These are all additive products to our portfolio, are not necessarily, you know, the bread and butter of where we're going to get all of our revenue and or find all of our audience, but they're, you know, extra pieces of these brands that I think are really fun for audiences to interact with and engage with. So I do want to figure it out for Bustle. We're just not quite at the moment where that's happening.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. And I think even with niche, like there's been this kind of like, not, I don't want to say there has been a pivot, but definitely the publishers I've been speaking with have been looking for ways to appeal to advertisers from that kind of niche expertise point of view. And I think with a product like print, there is still, you know, I've spoken with two publishers who have a print product and have said like print revenue grew for them last year, which I think is unique amongst those with like legacy print products. But they did say that it was largely like luxury brands, automotive brands, and ones that had a very strong interest in a niche audience. So you mentioned that you were able to sell advertising on within the print. What was that process like? And like, I guess, like, was the target to find very endemic, you know, advertisers? Was it advertisers who were kind of already raising their hands saying that they were interested in this? Like, what was the, you know, selling kind of commercial end of things?
Yeah, so we have an amazing ad team that works across particularly like our luxury fashion and space. And I think it had always been floated to certain clients, like, if there was nylon print, would you be interested? And I think it's so difficult to get people to buy something without having them be able to hold it in their hands first, right? So we, for this first initial issue, we're like, okay, even if we get zero advertising, we have to do it because there has to be kind of a proof of concept to then go out to Paris and show around and get people excited about. Now, that said, nylon has such a strong reputation and, you know, love, brand love, that we, and also we, you know, have another proof of concept at our company that we can produce beautiful print products, that we were able to get a number of advertisers to buy in without seeing anything. It was zero, you know, it was like, this is going to kind of look like this, but we can't show it to you yet because it's not done. So we have advertisers like Marc Jacobs, like Jimmy Choo, like Kate Spade, Omega, amongst others. And we have a pretty healthy ad page count in this first magazine that I know now that we have the actual product to show around, it's just going to grow exponentially. Now, that said, with print revenue growing, do I believe that print and those publishers that have spoken to you, that it is a super profitable endeavor? No, it's an expensive thing to produce. Everybody knows this. This is why print has been on the decline for the past 10 years. It's money, it's care, it's time, it's staff. I mean, these photo shoots are huge productions and costly, and you can see the result because they look amazing, but it's not like they're made for free. So that said, which is why we at our company, I think, have a really great model in that we are digital native. We started that way. We have all of our amazing sites, and then we can add these products on so that they are additional revenue rather than our company being based around them, which is obviously like a not a sustainable business, as we see all these other companies kind of flailing, trying to cut down their print because it just costs too much. And yes, your revenue can grow somewhat, but your costs are still really high. So if you have a company that's just like fully based on that, you're just like dead, right? But we luckily are sort of reverse engineering it, which I think that's very novel in the industry. I don't know any other company that's doing that, where it's like actually truly a digital company that's like, actually, and now we have beautiful print too. So you can buy that as well. And particularly for, as you said, the luxury clients are like loving it. They love these kinds of products, as they should, because they get to be aligned with beautiful, big, glossy photography in a way that, you know, they've been resistant sometimes and now they're coming around, but for a long time resistant to buying digital, right? So I think it's a great thing for us to be able to lean into in a smaller way, which is what we're doing.
We're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsor and we'll be right back. Yeah. And you mentioned the overhead of print and these, you know, big photo shoots, and, you know, you have the staff to be able to create the additional content for the magazine. But when it comes to like something like the photo shoots, again, like, you know, W has been dabbling in this area, so maybe they can be an example as well. But like, is there more just straight up investment that has to go into producing the visuals for a magazine versus what you would create for something like digital? Or have you kind of been already operating in that space where the rev up to creating additional assets for print wasn't as much of an investment as maybe, you know, the inverse of having a print operation first and then, you know, branching into digital.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that we have been, because we do produce covers across the board on our brands, and those covers cost money, and they cost the same as they would cost. I mean, maybe a little bit less, just because in terms of the actual like printing of the magazine and the like, you know, you want to blow it out a little bit. If you're going to be running it in a magazine, you want to at least have, you know, 12 to 14 pages for a story. Whereas digitally, you don't necessarily have to like fill that space in the same way. So you might blow it out a little bit. It will be maybe more expensive, a little bit more expensive. And this is just from our side, because I'm, you know, also we are a company that is lean and hubbed and have been able to survive because of that, right? So I come from the world of Hearst and Condé and, you know, not New York Magazine to a certain extent, but that's, you know, the other companies spend a lot of money, too much money. They have too many people, which is why they're all firing people and have been for the past 5 years. There are ways to do these products efficiently. Now, that said, they still cost a ton of money. So, you know, we have learned how to do them at a certain price point, but you cannot go below a certain amount and still come out with really high quality results. You cannot, you still need amazing photographers. You still need amazing stylists. You need to find a location. You need to fly the clothes. You know, like there are costs involved that are set costs. You could never produce a magazine for like less than a certain amount that looks good, that luxury advertisers want to align with. So we're trying our best. And again, I think that because we're doing it in this smaller way, it's still possible.
What would be that kind of like bottom threshold amount that has to spend to go into magazine production?
I mean, that's so dependent on the kind of magazine, the amount of pages you're doing, the kind of photography you want to do, the writers that you're paying. It varies so much. So, you know, I think I can't really speak to the actual dollar amount, but a lot. it costs a lot.
Yeah. And so I do want to get into W Magazine, because you've had that for a bit longer in print. That's six times a year. Is Nylon also going to be six times a year, or how frequently are you thinking that one?
No. And also just to clarify, so W is run, it's a JV that we sort of co-own, and we run the sales for W. They have a separate staff that's running W Magazine and W Digital that is just fully on W. So our staff works across all of our brands, including Nylon, but W is kind of like a separate island within our company. Particularly, you know, and that makes sense too, because it is much more print focused than any of our other brands. So they're six times a year. They also have a digital site that's producing daily content. Nylon is two times a year, with the idea that if we have huge success, we could always go up to four. But I don't think that's a decision that we would make until we kind of see how this year pans out. But for now, it's two. So we will have this spring issue and then a fall issue that will come out in October that we're starting to work on now.
Were there indications from like maybe the advertising side of things that proved successful enough that, you know, you felt this was something you could do with Nylon and have a, you know, business model built around an additional print product for a different brand?
Yes, I think W is a huge success story. And that's credit to Sarah Moonves, who is the editor-in-chief there and has really spearheaded sort of the new W. And I think that they have taken great market share from other luxury magazines that have kind of fallen by the wayside. And so anecdotally, and also, you know, just from a numbers perspective in our company, we've seen the increase in their advertising pages. We know that there's a demand there for a really high quality luxury print product. And so we knew that if we leaned in, there'd probably be interest. And we have those relationships, and I think have already seen the success again in this first issue. and the interest from advertisers. And so it seems like it's the same kind of thing where people presented with a beautiful, oversized niche print product, or they want to advertise. They want to be aligned with that. So we're excited to see where it goes for the next issue and beyond.
Is it a lot of the same advertisers that previously worked with W, or is it a new cohort that's coming in?
It's definitely a new cohort. And I think this also speaks to why it would work in our company, in that we have, you know, W is a very, it's like high touch, high end luxury fashion magazine. Nylon is a different beast. It is high low. It is price points that are, you know, we have luxury products. We also have more accessibly priced products in there. It is speaking to a young, kind of cool influencer-y, jet setter-y, like the sort of at the forefront of culture audience, which is different than W, which is great because advertisers, then there are lots of advertisers that would want to be aligned with a Nylon, right? But it W might not be, you know, make sense for them, and vice versa. So to tap into that more mid-level luxury advertising market is a great thing for us. And so we are excited about all the potential there that this is going to open up in those, in like that sector, more so than just, you know, the Balenciagas and Gucci's and Burberry's, et cetera.
I do want to get into the like audience piece of it too. And how this, I mean, we talked about advertising being a core part of it and the ambitions with growing a revenue stream there, but the audience piece of it seems to be a huge component as well. And you mentioned it's an exclusive drop. It's happening twice a year to start, 50,000 copies, distributed at like your events business too, which I know has been a very large kind of audience generating strategy you've had for the past couple of years now. So what was the, like, I guess, audience ambition here, how you're thinking about the audience journey from like digital to print, or even like print to digital in some cases? Like what's the hopes of this audience building, given also it's a nicher title? It has like a more kind of specific audience.
So Nylon is our brand that we build our tentpole events around. So even though it has that kind of more niche digital audience, event-wise, it is our biggest brand in our portfolio. So we have huge events at Coachella, at Art Basel, and Fashion Week, and we'll continue to grow the event side of the business. It's the perfect brand for events. It represents party, fun, cool worlds, and I think draws a big crowd of people to its events for that reason. So it's all kind of hand in hand in terms of then we have this magazine that will be dropped at these events. We have a magazine that people want to get their hands on. The amplification of this magazine is inevitably going to reach lots of new eyeballs. Now, while I think of Nylon as, I mean, I don't want to keep using the word niche because like, it's not super niche. Like it's like young person, you know, it's like person who cares about culture, person who cares about being the first one to know the cool musicians, person who cares about, you know, what the cool kids are wearing and where they're going and what they're doing and what they care about. So that's not super niche, right? That's just, there's lots and lots and lots of places for us to grow. And I still want us to be, I mean, mass. And I think that we're heading towards that. And I think the magazine helps get us there. I mean, the amount of press we're going to get for this Gwen story, the amount of press that we've been getting for our digital covers, like all of that to me just feels like Nylon should be in the ecosphere and in the air in a way. And the magazine just helps with that because we can get even bigger celebrities. We can get bigger stories. When you offer people print, they want to be part of it. Not that we've had huge problems getting digital covers and big celebrities for our digital site, but like it just makes it even easier. So that is, to me, the plan, in that this will continue to expand our audience. The more our audience expanded, the more advertisers are interested in us. Like, we don't, like, it's not this little tiny thing that we want to, like, keep special and private. So I think it all goes hand in hand, the digital, the print, and the event side for Nylon specifically. And that's what makes it such an exciting brand for us, and why we think print is, like, the perfect next step.
Yeah. And it, I, having been to one of the Nylon House events, or it was Nylon Nights. I'm trying to remember the actual name. It was in New York. Avril Lavigne was there. I, like, brushed her shoulder. Yeah. Oh my God. It was, like, life changing for me. The, you know, young elementary school fanatic for Avril Lavigne and me went just absolutely crazy. But that was, it was a really kind of, I don't know. It was a very different event from any other kind of media thing I've been to in a very long time. And I tend to go to a lot of them, just given, you know, the nature of this role. But it was a really kind of interesting, like, there were a lot of influencers there I recognized. It was just a very, like, fun event. And I'm wondering how you're thinking about the event business. Like, last year you did a decent amount of them. You mentioned that you're tying towards tentpole calendar moments in culture, like Coachella, Art Basel, things like that. Like, what's the kind of game plan for 2024 in terms of either blowing up that model to be at more events, or I'm going to say that again because I just touched my cord. What's the 2024 kind of game plan for either, you know, increasing that model, being at more events, leaning into that, like, really kind of, you know, core influential attendee base? Like, how has that model been working, and what's the kind of go forward from there?
Well, it's been working. I mean, I think that for us, we want to build a model that is sustainable in terms of the cost bears out with the revenue. Advertisers are loving these events. We are getting so much interest. We are also expanding into Bustle in terms of big events for next year. So that will be exciting. Sorry, not next year, 2024, this summer. And I think people are really, really into them. And for us as a company, it's kind of like, we're going to lean in when the opportunity is there. Now, that said, we're not an events only company, so we're not going to be producing 100 events a year. We're a content company first and foremost, but we've found that we can bring something to advertisers and to the audience that nobody else is bringing to them. And those opportunities are rare for clients to be able to partner with content companies on. And so, again, we've just seen so much success and growth. And from my side, as the chief content officer, it's really also brought new eyes to our sites and people that want to be involved in our sites and be photographed for our sites and be part of them because these events exist. So it's all really been a nice union of content and events, and I think will continue. And as I said, like, we're not planning on doing 100 Nylon events because we want the events to be the best events that we can throw. And once you start to dilute a brand and just throw out things that aren't cool and great and special, people can sort of smell that. And we've seen that with other companies too, where it's like they went too far into that world. The events lost their sparkle and people lost interest and clients lost interest. So we want to maintain that exclusivity and that feeling of there's really no better place to be at Art Basel than at the Nylon House event. You know, I was there last year and there was just the line to get in was so shocking to me as someone who's like running the company and running the content side. People care so much about this brand and about this event. And that really is something that you can't buy and you can't create in any other way. So we're into it. I mean, our CEO, Brian Goldberg, is really into it and believes that we can continue to increase revenue and have it continue to be a significant piece of our revenue each year.
Yeah, because both events and print, to your point, are, you know, there's a high Sorry, now my stomach's grumbling. I feel like the mic can pick up on like literally everything. Because both events and print have like a high or like they're high overhead, low margin to a large degree, depending on how you do it. I mean, to your point about some of the like legacy magazine publishers, like there was a lot of overspending that happens in those cases. So how are you thinking about the like cost production of some of these? You know, they're very core to your audience and to your point, like your content strategy, but making sure that there's a balance there in terms of like investment and return on that.
Yeah, it's the thing we do every day is try to balance that and make sure that we're earning more than we're spending. And this is the problem that media companies have gotten themselves into, where they're spending more than they're earning. So it's a constant look at what is this going to cost us? How much can we make from it? How special can we make it for the client without overspending? How special can we make the magazine be without going into a hole? So it's definitely a balance. And I think, again, we are coming from such a kind of scrappy, lean, startup-y feeling, like way about it, that I think we're immediately at an advantage because the costs involved, when you work at a legacy publisher, it's like, no, this is how much it has to cost, right? And we're sort of getting around that in interesting ways where nothing is set. We're like inventing it on the fly. So I think we're able to capitalize on these opportunities in ways that are possibly like making us more money than other people would. Which is great, and it's exciting, and it's but it is a constant battle for sure, because these are, as you said, these products cost a lot of money. In order to make anything good, it's going to cost a lot of money. People can sense when something is cheap, right? And so these are the kinds of products that you cannot be cheap about.
Yeah. And given your, you know, history working at some of these, again, like legacy magazine publishing houses, how have you needed to like rethink your either approach to like a print operation or like your own kind of learned knowledge for something that, you know, is a legacy medium but has to be rethought of in a modern, you know, for a modern audience in a modern market?
I've been lucky enough over the course of my career to have been at brands that were undergoing transformations, like always. So I've been part of so many redesigns, so many rethinks, rebrands. And so I just kind of took that experience and knowledge of redoing something for now and applied it to what we were thinking about for Nylon. I mean, it was a really fun process. It was intense in that a lot of people in our company didn't have print experience. And so this was their first time working on a print product. So it was a learning curve for sure. But a fun one. And I think people are even more proud of the final product because of that. And because there wasn't the kind of jaded, ugh, been there, done that kind of feeling. Like, you know, a lot of our younger staffers, this is the first time they've ever created something that they can hold. And I think that's such a wonderful experience for them to have. Now, granted, it almost killed us in the middle of it when we were producing it, but we got through and we're going to have to get through the next one. So it was just a fun, you know, you take something apart, you have a million designs, you have a million ideas, you whittle down a lineup, you have people throw stuff out that gets trashed, you have stuff that goes awry, you have photo shoots that need to be scrapped, you have to come up with a language of a magazine, a design language, what are all these pages called? What are all the sections? I mean, it was like magazine making 101. But again, I am lucky enough to have been through that and through it before. And so coming at it with that kind of base knowledge of like, this is how you put together a print magazine, and then tapping into the brilliant minds of the company of, you know, what people want now, what the younger generation is looking for in something like this, and using those ideas and putting it into place. So I think it looks really good. I'm excited about it.
And you mentioned a few times it's a lean team. What's the, like, did you have to hire anyone with like magazine or like print specific kind of backgrounds, or like how big is the team that went into making this print product?
Yeah, we didn't hire anyone full time, which possibly was a mistake, but trying to keep costs down. We definitely used freelance. We had a few designers that we hired on a freelance basis to help our creative team work on the templates for the magazine. As always, we assigned stories out to freelance writers. And, you know, we do that for our digital sites as well. And then, you know, we used it as a shared experience across sites. So we were pulling in people from not only the Nylon team, but from Bustle and from Romper and from, you know, to help us with the editing. I mean, I dusted off my red pen, which I haven't used in years, and was getting into the nitty gritty and the copy editing. So I think everyone really pitched in. I do think that as we go forward and figure out how successful this product is, and, you know, if we're going to four issues, obviously we need a real staff to do this. This was a, as we said, it's like a proof of concept. We needed to make it before we figured out how far we're going to go into it. For next year, so we'll figure that out as we go. But it was a bonding experience, and we did it.
And the red pen relic, I miss mine as well. But awesome. Well, that brings us to the end of the episode. Thank you so much for joining me and going over like everything that went into creating this print product for Nylon. I'm personally excited to get my hands on a copy. So thanks so much.
I thought we sent you one already. We have them. I have a box. I can send it to you.
I definitely have one probably sitting in my apartment lobby. I am currently at my mom's house, but that's the first thing I'm going to check once I get home.
Okay. Well, thanks, Kaylee. It was so nice to talk to you. And yeah, we'll check it out. Check out the magazine.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Thanks again for tuning into the Digiday podcast. For more coverage of the media and marketing industries, check out digiday.com. If you're not already a member of Digiday Plus, be sure to subscribe to get exclusive content, research, guides, and more. Digiday Plus members also get access to weekly briefings from the Digiday edit team, including our newest newsletter, The Media Briefing. And as always, please rate, review, and subscribe to the Digiday podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Talk to you next week.